Hello and welcome to the official podcast of Palate Exposure, featuring Ilona Thompson, a podcast for those seeking the ultimate in wine, food, and travel. Each week, she interviews winemakers, chefs, celebrities, and a variety of guests that shape the way we enjoy life.
So that allowed me to relax a little bit, but obviously, you know, the fight that we fought, that we're still fighting, there's on many fronts. You know, there's obviously the winemaking, there is the convincing the trade, distributors, restaurants, SOMS, that this truly is a world-class Cabernet region. We're still working on that. Consumers, the reaction has been amazing. The reaction of consumers has just been, it exceeded so much my expectation. We get 50,000 visitors a year. I mean, you come here on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, we shuttle your car down, and the tasting room is packed. Our tasting room has grown year after year, 40 to 50% with the sales and club members, I mean, nonstop. And we're at a point where we're busting through the seams, and that's with zero marketing. We have never done marketing. We have never done any PR or marketing. We are going to start this year, but we never have before. It's purely word of mouth. It became viral. People in Southern California especially quickly realized you can get in your car, drive 3 hours, taste incredible wines, have an incredible experience, that's a culinary experience, great views, 3 hours away, and get back home the day after, and you know, and get it for a better price. That's a big difference from having to fly, land in San Francisco, rent a car, you know, drive to Napa, spend a lot more money, and come back. And I think that helped contribute to our success. A lot of our business is from Southern California, but now it's actually from Northern California as well. A lot of people from San Francisco, from Palo Alto, from San Jose, come down here. It's close, 2 hours away, and they have a great experience.
Let's talk about this experience, because I believe there's one more element to the story of why the consumer experience has such a huge edge here. And I think it's how you treat consumers.
I agree. And also the regulations. I mean, we're a very open environment. Anybody can make a reservation. And, you know, we focus on the three P's. Mm-hmm. Okay, so for us, everything George and I do, we focus on the three P's because we think that's what consumers want. First, it needs to be a great product. Our wines better be stellar because our message is in the bottle at the end of the day. That's one. Two, people. We've invested so much in our people. We have incredible people working at this winery who are equally as passionate as we are. They come here in their days off. They're passionate about the wines. They'll sit and spend an hour with you, telling you the stories, telling you how we do things. They're educated constantly because we want people to be part of that experience when people come here. And last is the place. Where can you find views like we have here in a beautiful tasting room? Comfortable chairs, onyx bars. I mean, we have one chef that went to Cordon Bleu, and three sous chefs that are trained by him. They're all catered to great experience. So the three P's allowed us also to really contribute to our success. And that's what a consumer wants. They don't want to walk into a tasting room, eat oyster crackers, taste wine, and ask if they want to join the club. That's not what they want. They come to Wine Country because they're in the mood for romance. They're in the mood to be, you know, taken to a whole new dimension. They're in a mood to eat great, to drink great wine, to meet people, to be social. That's why people come to Wine Country. And a lot of wineries, unfortunately, they don't get that. You still find wineries where people walk in and they're like, have a fridge with some pre-packed sandwiches, and you have oyster crackers, and you taste wine, you know, and at a bar, and you ask if you want to join the club. That's not cutting it. So we try to provide a real experience when it comes to wine tasting. And that has contributed quite a bit to our success. The biggest comment we hear is people come here, they have a great experience, they spend like a whole Saturday here, they join our club, and we see them the next day come back. They're like, you know what, we didn't want to go anywhere else. We came back to spend the day here because they don't want to go anywhere else. That's what they're looking for. So more and more wineries are jumping on this bandwagon. We kind of introduced this to Paso about 8 years ago or so. And now I'm hearing more wineries are actually following suit. And it's very important. So to answer your question, I agree with you. I think people want the full experience. And they don't want to stay at a hotel and spend $2,000 a night either. They want to come and get enough for their buck. And I think Paso can deliver that today. You can come, stay at a hotel, spend a whole weekend, and not, you know, be guilty to have to tap into your savings to pay your credit card after you come back and you have too much fun. It's affordable. And we like to call this affordable luxury or approachable luxury. And that's what we provide here. We may have wines that go up to all the way to $1,000 a bottle, but we honestly feel that every bottle, regardless of the price, over-delivers. The $20 cab over-delivers. Our $50 cab that we sell wholesale also over-delivers. So as long as you're over-delivering, that's what the consumer is looking for. And they want an experience. That's what we focused on.
You know, I just want to validate this for a second because I go to a lot of trade and consumer tastings. And when your brand comes up in the consumer context, yes, there's all kinds of gushing. People absolutely love you. But what's really notable is the trade, because that's a jaded folk. And I don't hesitate to say that a couple conversations I've had, that was a love affair. These people are so invested in your brand because of what you've created, the value you've created, that it's almost an emotional experience to talk to them. And I don't have these conversations with the trade folk.
Let me tell you, I cannot relate more to what you're saying. I mean, I so can relate to what you're saying. We have some incredible experiences and relationships with our distributors. Let me quote one. I'll tell you why. John Newlin runs Southern Wine Spirits for California. We've worked with Southern Wine Spirits from day one, pretty much. They have endorsed us and believed in us literally from day one. Every time I meet with them, okay? And John, if you're listening, that's for you. He told me the same thing. He says, you and your brother have done something that most other wineries have not. And I go, what is it? He said, everything you promised you're going to do, you did. You know, a relationship is based on two things, right?
Yeah.
Trust and respect. It doesn't matter if it's with your brother, your sister, your dad, your mom, your son, your friend, right? It's all about trust and respect. And we have really worked hard on showing our distributors that we want to cultivate the trust and the respect between us and the distributors. There's no smoke and mirrors. There's no false promises. If we can't do something, we can't do it. But if we tell them we're going to do something, we do it. And they love us because of that. They love working with us, and obviously they love our wines. So we have felt so much love from our distributors. It's crazy. I sometimes think about it, and I'm so humbled by so much love has been given to our brand and to my family. It's been amazing.
Well, clearly you're the galvanizing agent of what occurred. I mean, yes, there's the external part of it. And honestly, when I walked in here 10 years ago, the fundamentals were all there. The attention to detail, even the choice of music. You felt comfortable, you felt happy. And now you just developed it into something that's almost a bit utopian. It shouldn't be, but it is in the wine world because so many things are right.
Thank you.
In terms of the business itself, again, going back for a second to you being 40 years old, having a family to support, putting your all again, this time your nest egg. You did it all over again, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
What was in your mind like a short and long-term strategy? What did it look like?
You know, I've never chased money. Never in my life. Well, let me take that back. Once I chased money, and it didn't work. I've always, for the most part, I've always chased my passion. I was passionate about computers. I chased that. I got involved with many companies. I've always chased my passion. If I'm not passionate about something, then I can't sell it, and I will not believe in it. And if I can't believe in it, I'm not gonna do it. So this was my passion, and I had a hard belief that we could do this. Now, I have to tell you, it exceeded our expectations. However big I thought it'd be, however successful I thought it'd be, it definitely exceeded my expectations by a long shot. Working with my brother is always amazing. We have such a close relationship. We fight dragons, but we fight very well when we're together. And I could have never done this without him. And you could have never done this without me. So we're the yin and the yang. Often people try to compare us. And, you know, you can't really compare us because we are the yin and the yang, but together we complete each other. And that's the best way I can describe our relationship.
That's fantastic. I mean, that's fantastic. It really is so unique to have that mirror effect when somebody can look at you and be honest, but like you said, be respectful mm-hmm. and have that kind of synergy that fits. I get a lot of questions from businesses that travel. They'll have similar pain points, and you've already outlined, if you people listen carefully, there's your business strategy here. Work hard, be dedicated, be passionate, believe.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And execute to the top extent with nothing left to chance.
Passion is contagious.
Yeah.
You know, passion is contagious. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I meet with people on a regular basis, and you know, the best ability of a leader is to motivate their people.
Yes.
So when you're indeed. Passionate, people see it. And you're genuine, people see it. So when people hear us speak and hear us talk about our vision and hear us talk about the wines, then the next thing is, the first thing we want to do is like, I want to taste this. And when they taste it, it's confirmed. And that's the beauty, is that it's not just smoke mirrors. It's like, we live it. And our wines must reflect that passion. So I don't cut corners. I mean, I don't care if I'm generating 50 gallons per ton or 80. I will do whatever it takes. But, you know, our name is on the bottle. And that quality will not be compromised. And that's something I feel very strongly about. So consumers like that because it's predictable and it's genuine.
And your business has always been consumer-centric. You've always highlighted in your computer business decline, in your wine business, the guest. They're at the top of the pyramid, aren't they?
They are. At the end of the day, without the consumer, you know, you're not gonna get anywhere. And so it's very important for us to make sure that the consumer, you know, is a believer, and they are.
Your brother and your dad, huge mentors, obviously, major impact.
Absolutely. My brother was always more like a father to me.
Wow. Any other individuals? You mentioned La Venture, La Ventura, is the correct way to pronounce it, I suppose. Any other folks along the way that had a major impact on your thinking?
Yes, a gentleman that I owe a lot of gratitude to in the early days, a gentleman by the name of Scott McLeod.
Okay.
I'll tell you the funny story about Scott McLeod. So Scott is arguably one of the best winemakers in Napa Valley. He worked for Rubicon for 18 years, mm-hmm. went to Davis, but he's a great individual, great human being, truly is very knowledgeable too. And you know, when I was getting started, I was mentored by another great mentor, Delphine Barbeau, who was the winemaker at Chateau L'Evangile, mm. and then she went to Chateau Lascombe, and she mentored me the first couple of years. And then I hired a lady called Karen Hunt, and we hired her back in 2009. And Karen had been responsible for all the sales at Francis Ford Coppola. Mm. So when Karen joined us, she goes, look, I love you guys, the two brothers, you know, I believe in what you want to do. And we were nothing back then. We were talking like we were just getting started. Mm. She said, but I would like to have a gentleman that I have a lot of faith in to come and taste your wines. And I said, sure, send him over. His name is Scott McLeod. I said, okay, I'll give her my... She had my cell phone number. He goes, he'll call you. So a few weeks later, I get a phone call. He goes, hi, this is Scott McLeod. I'm in town. And Karen asked me to come taste your wines. Would you mind meeting with me? I said, not at all. So Scott comes in, tastes the wines. Then at the end, I didn't know much about him or what he did. He asked me for a sample. He said, can I have a sample? And I said, sure, here's a sample. So a month later, I got a phone call from Scott McLeod. He says, I'm in town. Can we meet for a second? I said, sure. He comes to me. It was really funny. This story is really funny. And I love saying it. He gets in front of me. He says, okay, let's have a talk. And I go, yeah, what do you have in mind? He goes, look, I'm a winemaker. You're a winemaker. Come on, be honest with me. Where'd you get these grapes from? Did you buy them in Napa? I said, no, I didn't. Why do you say that? He goes, then you bought some juice from Napa and you blended it in. I said, I didn't do that either. He goes, it's impossible, this wine is from Paso. I've done business for 20 years here, I've bought grapes everywhere. It's impossible. I go, well, why do you say that? He said, I started a company called Wine X-Ray. It measures phenolics on wines. And he's now, by the way, very successful in many wineries in Napa and all over the world, uses technology to measure phenolics. And I didn't, at the time, I wasn't too familiar with phenolics. It was just my first education on phenolics. And I said, and what were the results? He goes, well, it's one of the darkest cab I've ever measured. He goes, there's no way Paso can do that. Of course, by the end of the meeting, he did believe it was from our vineyard. And he went out with a line that we actually put on our website back in 2010 that said that Dow will make a cab that will rival any cab in the world in the next 5 years. That was very, very bold. He got a lot of phone calls from people in Napa that know him saying, what the heck are you saying? Paso is going to compete with Napa? Seriously? But Scott was a big believer. He mentored me for a couple of years. Since 2012, he's not involved in the winemaking, but he still consults for the wineries and helps us with all kind of issues, having ranging from new winery designs and tanks designs and all these things. But he did mentor me the first couple of years, and he was a big influence on me. He's a great individual, very knowledgeable, and a lot of his knowledge that he passed along to me in the early days has allowed me to shape my winemaking skills to where they are today.
You have a knack of surrounding yourself with people that not just confident, but really have special qualities. And I think it now goes the other direction when you mentor your staff. You're very accessible, very available. I know that from the feedback that I got from people that they can't say enough good things about how you're there for everybody.
You know, we've created a very unique environment here. I like to view this winery, and I tell that to all my staff, as a sanctuary. You know, I gave a talk at Christmas last year, that we had, and believe it or not, there were people that didn't work for us, but they happened to hear the talk because they were organizing the event, and they called us and they said they wanted to join us based on the talk, and I really meant every word of the talk. And what the talk was about was that this is more than just a winery; it's a sanctuary. If you've ever been rejected, this is a place for you. If you've ever wanted an opportunity, this is a place for you. If you've ever been discriminated against for whatever reason, your gender, your color, your whatever, your faith, whatever it is, this is a place for you. And I really mean that. I see everybody here as part of our family. I want people, regardless of where they come from, regardless of what, you know, any way they come from, I want them to feel that this is a place that will not judge them, but that will love them, accept them, and give them an opportunity to rise and shine. And these are words that my brother and I feel very strongly about. And the reason we feel strongly about that is because that's how people treated us. We came out of nowhere. Now, we came out of nowhere being Lebanese, growing up in France, and people give us a chance. They loved us for who we were, gave us a chance, and allowed us to tap into our potential. So the least we could do is reciprocate that and offer that kind of environment to other people.
You have an incredible gift, a gift of empathy that shines in everything you do. And I just want to take a moment and say thank you for that, because I think that's what's missing so notably in the world. If we just had a bit more of that for each other, a lot of problems wouldn't exist.
I would agree. You know, it's you know, caring about another person gives so much joy. You know, being able to touch a person who especially, you know, needs to be touched, you know, and needs to be talked to, needs to be comforted. I take a lot of pleasure in that. And I really, truly want to see every person who joins this winery reach their potential. And I want to give an environment to them that allows them to do so. And my brother and I feel very strongly about that again.
You had seen so much tragedy so early on. I know that had to have contributed to the empathetic part of you, and of course your dad, who taught you the values, and you learned by osmosis. And your life is really in some ways a study of contrasts, from extreme tragedy that's almost unimaginable to such triumphs. What was the hardest moment for you in your life experience so far?
I would say one of the hardest moments in my life was in 2010. I lost three family members. Yes. My sister had breast cancer, and she passed away about a year after. Mm-hmm. And then the day she passed away, both of my parents shut down, and they both passed away within 14 months after that. So I lost three family members in 14 months. Then ended up having some health issues, which came out of nowhere. I think the stress probably caused some of that. And then I actually ended up going through a divorce as well, which was probably long overdue. But all these things packed in about a period of 4 years were very difficult years. But you know, I found there are so many great moments during these 4 years, so that I can't take away either. There were so many joys, you know, that came from me living my dream, you know, and pursuing my passion. So I can't say it's all negative, but these were very difficult years. I don't wish my enemy to go through losing three family members in 14 months and walking to the cemetery three times in 14 months and the people there looking at you saying, what are you back for here for? I mean, it's crazy. You know, it's crazy because if you look at some of the videos we had together as a family, a year before that happened, we were all celebrating, having dinner together, drinking wine, talking about life. Life can take a turn very quickly. And for me, 2010 to 2014 was a very, very difficult period.
I'm so sorry that this happened. You clearly are an extraordinarily strong individual. You have a spirit that's really unbreakable from what I know and from what I'm hearing today. And obviously what got you through is that passion, compassion, love. That had to have been things that moved forward, you know, when unimaginable happens. And I think the lesson here is that life can be very short and things can be taken away, like you said, very quickly. But what cannot be taken away is who you are.
Correct. That's so true. Very true.
So let's talk about triumphs. My goodness, as you pointed out earlier, your brand has grown so much, both in terms of, you know, the guests coming here in hundreds of thousands cumulatively, right? But also in the brand awareness without any marketing or advertising. That's quite a feat.
It is, but we know we finally will start doing marketing and advertising. We hired an incredible team member to join us. She's so bright, so intelligent, and really talented. And she's taken the helm on really creating our PR and our marketing campaign. So I think you're going to start seeing that. I'll share with you a really funny story. Actually, I've got a couple, if you don't
mind. Cool. No, I love stories.
So, you know, we've obviously done a great job in California, but for many years, our brand wasn't known outside of California. It was mostly California. But things have changed in the last few years. Every year around August, I go to Aspen, and I always like to take the gondola to the top of Ajax Mountain. And I usually buy water, and I like to hike down. I love to hike. So I'll hike down. It takes about 2.5 hours to hike the whole way down. It's a great exercise. So last year, I'm there right when they're closing, which was, I think, 5 o'clock. And I buy about 6 bottles for our groups, you know. And I'm at the cashier, and there's a person in front of me paying. And then the lady puts a sign saying, they say, we're closed. So I'm the last guy, you know, before the cashier closes, the store closes, on top of the mountain. And the lady makes a big sigh. She says, oh, it's 5 o'clock, almost wine time. Now, she doesn't know who I am. I know nothing that says who I am. And I'm getting close to her so she can ring the water. And I go, oh, you like wine? She goes, yeah, I love wine. She goes, I can't wait every day to get home around 5 o'clock. And first thing I do is I have a glass or two of wine, and it just makes my day. And as she's ringing the water, and I go, oh, well, tell me, what kind of wine you like? She goes, well, I like reds, mostly reds. I go, any wine in particular? She goes, yeah, my favorite by far is this one you probably never heard of. It's called Dow. And I'm sitting down watching her, and I'm almost ready to laugh. And I don't say anything still. She goes, it's a great wine. It's super balanced, got a great nose. And she started describing the wine. And she's describing our $20 cab, which is a fantastic wine, especially for the price. Mm-hmm. So then I give her my credit card, and she rings the credit card, and she looks at the name. And her eyes get about as big as her head, and she goes, she like meaning Santa Claus. She's like, any connection to the winery? I said, well, I'm the winer, I'm the winemaker, and the owner. She goes, oh my gosh, she was giving me hugs. She felt like she just met Nirvana, and that was a funny experience. So our name is getting replicated, you know, all over the country right now. We're in 50 states, and we're in about 15 countries now. But we just signed a deal to be in another 20 countries or so. So we're slowly creating the ripple to really put Paso on the map and our wines, not just in America or North America, but the rest of the world.
The conclusion of this interview can be found in the next podcast, already available for your download. Thanks again for tuning in to the official podcast of Palate Exposure, featuring Ilona Thompson.